Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. And if you just listened to our last episode, we just recorded our last episode. So we're doing a double recording. Today is Friday, June 28th. One of those episodes dropped a week ago on July 1st. This one's going to drop on July 8th. So if we say something that sounds really stupid and out of date, and like, yeah, you said this guy was your new top 10 starting pitcher and he just announced his retirement yesterday. Sorry. We only have the information we have as of June 28th, but you know, we'll get into that. The last episode we just recorded that we posted last week was looking at players at catcher, corner infield, and middle infield who had jumped into our top 10 for keeper leagues. We're now going to look at starting pitchers, relief pitchers, and outfielders. And Pete, I found pitchers in particular, like with hitters, you know, the guys we talked about last week, Langeliers and Ohapi at catcher, Volpe and Abrams at middle infield, our corner infielders were Naylor and Westberg. Like, those guys aren't going to get hurt in some way or have anything happen over the next couple weeks that's going to meaningfully change what I think about them for next year at this point. The pitcher one is a little bit different because, like, without, you know, putting anything out there, we could easily pick a pitcher and they could undergo Tommy John surgery a week from now. And by the time this episode comes out, people are going to be like, that guy was in your top 10. But, you know, it made it harder for me. I felt like I was putting more on the line with my pitcher picks.
Yeah, that's a fair way to look at it. I think you just do the best you can with what we currently have. Like, it kind of goes back to my philosophy with a player we're going to talk about later in Mason Miller, where it's like, you're pitching well right now. We are so, so bad. I don't mean we on Keeper Cut. I mean, we as fantasy baseball analysts are so, so bad at predicting and analyzing and blah, blah, blah injuries that it's a conversation I'm almost like tired of. So if you're healthy right now and you're pitching well, I'm going with you. And I think that's based on the player I chose going to be a pretty clear indicator of how I felt.
Yeah. So let's quickly talk about jersey numbers. This is episode 142, jersey number 42. I mean, on the one hand, literally every player that we watch has worn the jersey number 42 for at least a few games, because
that's a good point.
That is a Major League Baseball thing they do now. Yeah, in terms of number, you know, players who this number is associated with, the obvious one is in fact Jackie Robinson, who, you know, Major League Baseball has gone out of their way to make sure that number is associated with him now and forever. But there's actually a handful of other players who wore it. And so, well, I think we're probably going to end up back on Jackie. I think it's worth calling out. Mariano Rivera, obviously the second most famous 42, but a former Red Sox, although I think he's better known for his Oakland days, Dave Henderson, wore number 42 for 14 years. A guy named Ron Hodges, who I'm not familiar with, but he did play in my lifetime, wore it for 12 years. He accumulated 6.1 WAR though. But other good players who wore this number for extended periods of time are fewer and farther between, but Mo Vaughn is the other name that comes up, as sort of a modern player who wore it, Bruce Sutter. But I mean, it's gotta be Jackie, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the Jackie Robinson episode. We're certainly not giving it to freaking Mariano Rivera.
You're not going to try to make a case for Mo Vaughn.
No, Jackie Robinson episode.
Yeah, for sure. So with that out of the way, we are now at the point where we would typically do our head-to-head heroes, as we have declared it. However, we are recording this before the week of July 1st through 7th happens, as opposed to after. And so we're going to do something really weird, which is we're going to predict who we think is going to be our head-to-head hero, except by the time you hear this, these games have already happened. So all you're going to do is listen to the next few minutes of this episode and be like, wow, those guys were really smart, or wow, those guys are idiots. And it'll be not helpful to you at all, but we'll do it quickly so we can move on to talking about the guys we really want to talk about this episode. But Pete, who are you guessing that week of July 1st through the 7th? Who's it going to be?
I was going to say any Rocky, but I'll pick up a specific one and go with Nolan Jones. The Rockies have all their games at home, or had all their games at home last week again.
And seven of them. They don't have an off day at all. They have a full seven games in Coors.
Exactly. So the move is a Rocky, and the pitching matchups aren't that scary. So I'm going with Nolan Jones. I would have picked any of the Rockies. I like Nolan Jones the most. I think he's due. I know he got off to an absolutely miserable start and then missed May. But in June, he has a 137 WRC plus, you know, again, recording June 28th. His walk rate is an absurd 26%, and he's striking out just 24% of the time, which is an amazing number for Nolan Jones, which we'll take. And the pitching matchups, Bryce Wilson, Dallas Keuchel, Colin Ray, Tobias Myers, who I know it's hilarious. I don't even know if he's going to start or not, but he's currently slated. Tobias Myers, who's pitching well, but I'm not scared. And then he'll have a tough time Friday versus Cole Reagans. And then Seth Lugo, who's having a good season, and Brady Singer, who's also having a pretty good season. But seven games at Coors, I'm going with Nolan Jones. That's my pick.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. I'm going to go... Boy, I'm going back and forth here. I'm looking at pitching, and there aren't a lot of really good two start options, which is what I was looking for. Like, who's making two starts and they're two good matchups? And there isn't really one, but we did get some news in the last hour or so, which is now, again, by the time you hear this, this is like old news, but we did get some news in the last hour or so that is going to lead me to take Reynaldo Lopez as my head-to-head hero. He's going to make two starts. As things stand now, he is lined up to start Tuesday the 2nd at home against San Francisco. Not a great offense. And then he starts at the end of the week on Sunday, again at home, against Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia is a great offense, but Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber are going anymore on the IL as we speak. And if my math is correct, they will not be eligible to come off the IL until the day after that Reynaldo Lopez start. So you've got Lopez starting against the San Francisco team. So like just looking at, you know, WRC plus, let's just use WOBA by team. San Francisco is not a, I don't know where they go. Not a bad offense. They're sort of a middle of the pack offense. They're 14th in baseball in WOBA, 307. Philadelphia obviously has been very good. They're fourth in baseball at 330. But that San Francisco offense doesn't really scare me. I don't think it should. Philadelphia is a little bit easier to face on the road. They're a 323 WOBA instead of a 330 WOBA. Overall, they're a 330 WOBA. On the road, they're 323. That still is very good. It's a top six road WOBA. But it's pushing them back down closer to the pack. And they've lost Schwarber and Harper. And so I'm going to say, I think if you could get Lopez in there for two starts against those two offenses, I think you're gonna fare pretty well. So That's my head-to-head hero pick is Reynaldo Lopez.
That Phillies lineup projected by Roster Resource without Real Muto, without Harper, and without Schwarber. Bryson Stott, Trey Turner, Alec Bohm. Okay. Then Brandon Marsh, Nick Castellanos, Cody Clemens, Whit Merrifield, Garrett Stubbs, and Johan Rojas. So, yeah, you should stream against the Phillies.
Yeah, I think you can. So, I'm feeling good about that. So that's my pick there. But... like I said, this isn't even like useful from a like, hey, now you can go start these guys. Like, it's too late to take our advice. It was either good advice or bad advice. You can't use it either way.
I'm excited to see.
We are going to continue on with part two of our guys who have leapt into the top 10 at a given position. And we are going to start with the outfield since we've been working our way through the positions. And I will say this. I'm going to give both of us a little grace here and say that being a top 10 second baseman or a top 10 shortstop or a top 10 first baseman is not nearly as impressive as being a top 10 outfielder, right? A lot more outfielders play. So like there's a little bit of wiggle room here for a guy to be more like, you know, they jumped in the top 20. But there are some interesting names here of outfielders who are not super highly drafted who are having excellent seasons. So Pete, who did you go with?
Sure. So I think we got to talk about the position right off the bat, because suggesting that this player is top 10, he's been top 10 so far this season, but going into drafts next year, like it's probably not going to be the case. Although at this point he's going to receive MVP votes. He's top five in WAR. It's yeah. Jarren Duran. He's having an absolutely phenomenal season, but I had to really think about this because I was like, all right, who are the guys who are just definitely going to be top 10 outfielders next year? And I got to a list of seven, and that's Aaron Judge, Kyle Tucker, Ronald Acuna, Soto, Tatis, Alvarez, Rodriguez. And I know Julio Rodriguez is having a poor season, whatever. He's going to be top 10 next year. Then I have Christian Yelich, like right there. Right. I honestly, I don't even know why I don't include Yelich in that list before. I just feel like he's a tier below, so I put him a tier below, but he's definitely, definitely there. Then it's like, you know, Corbin Carroll's got to be in this conversation still, despite how bad he's been. You and I have debated Michael Harris and Luis Robert before, both of whom have been injured and struggled this season, but I think he'll still be in the conversation. Brian Reynolds having a terrific year. Kyle Schwarber until now, obviously with the injury, having an excellent year. Adelis Garcia underperforming. Mike Trout at some point hopefully will be back, although he's not going to go as a top 10 outfielder. So like there's no shortage of options despite how bad the position overall has been. And that doesn't include guys like Josh Lowe, Riley Green, Wyatt Langford, who's been hitting a lot better since he came back. So there's plenty of names, but I went with Jarren Duran. That's my long way of saying I went with Jarren Duran because he does have the speed element, which would it is kind of a difference maker for this position in particular. Like, are you top 10 or not? Like, you're either someone who hits the absolute snot out of the ball, like Judge or Alvarez, or you basically bring everything to the table. And Jarren Duran so far has basically brought everything to the table. You'd like to see more than seven home runs, but he has been hitting for a lot more power over the last month. He also, for what it's worth, leads the American League in both doubles and triples. So assuming, you know, some of those start to turn into over the fence homers, like, you know, I think there's more power than what the seven should or would suggest. And otherwise, I mean, there's nothing he's doing poorly. And he's leading off for a team that has has had a pretty good offense so far. And as they get more healthy and start to call up some of these young guys, again, we're talking keeper leagues. Duran should be batting leadoff for what is going to be a pretty good offense. The strikeout rate has gone down every season, and it's at 22.2% right now, which is like, you don't even think about strikeout rate. Like, that's just not a problem for Jarren Duran, which we thought it might be when he first got called up. The walk rate is up to 8.1%, so he's getting on base more, more opportunities to steal, and he's hitting the ball a lot harder. His exit velocity is 91.3 miles an hour. His barrel rate is 8.3%, which isn't amazing, but it's much better than where it's been. He hits a decent amount of ground balls. He's about league average, but we'll take that with his speed. That should keep his batting average pretty high. He's not pulling as much as you'd hope, so maybe not as much power appears, but that's, you can still kind of hit for power a little bit as a lefty if you go the other way at Fenway Park, just because the Green Monster is so close. So Duran is probably not going to go as a top 10 outfielder in drafts next year, but assuming he keeps this up, he's going to be damn close. And I guess it wouldn't shock me if he does end up being a top 10 outfielder.
Yeah. I mean, I think if he continues to push for like a 1540 type season, and he is on that pace, close to that pace. I guess he's a little behind in power, but close enough. I think that's super, super interesting. He has certainly jumped up boards and belongs in that conversation in a way that, you know, he wasn't close to that conversation this year, right? He was a sleeper, if anything. So yeah, I really like that pick. I mean, as I look at what he's doing, I do wonder about the power, because, you know, it's a little bit like we talked in our last episode about Volpe, and Duran is sort of an interesting counterpart here, where Duran is, you know, got 3-4 inches on Volpe. He's got 30 pounds on Volpe. Like, he's a much bigger person, but the scouting reports have never suggested power is coming for him. Right. I mean, if you know, he's, it just hasn't been an expected part of his game. He has never hit, I don't think he has ever hit 20 in a calendar year. He did hit 18 in 2021. He had 13 the year after. He had 10 last year. Like, I don't see another power level coming from him. But Duran, I mean, he doesn't necessarily need it to be, you know, a top outfielder in the, like, I'm trying to think who was I thinking of that sort of fits this bill, like in the prime Starling Marte fit mold, right? I mean, Starling Marte at his best was, you know, getting on base and hitting for a high average. He was stealing 40-ish bases a year, and he was in that 15-ish to 20-ish home run range. Marte career high in 2019, he hit 23. His best year other than that, he has 20. If they go back to the 2019 baseball, Duran might hit 23. But I think that's sort of the type of player he's going to be. And for a while there, Starling Marte was a guy who you were taking that early in drafts because he offered some power. He stole bases. He got on base. He hit for average. Like, Duran checks all those boxes. And so I think the thing that'll determine just how good he is what you were saying about the Red Sox lineup. Like, does the Red Sox lineup stay strong enough for him to score a ton of runs? He's not going to get a ton of RBIs just because he's going to lead off, and that's that. But like, he could be a super exciting four category contributor for you, where he's, you know, making your team really strong in three categories, right? Stolen bases, batting average, runs scored, and doing enough to make himself an asset in power without necessarily helping you a ton, but he's not hurting you. And the RBIs will probably drag you down a bit in RBIs. Like, that's probably going to happen because he's going to be a leadoff hitter. But he's got 37 RBIs. He's on pace for like 70, 75 RBIs. If he can do that, but it will depend then again, you know, where does he hit in the lineup? Does he sort of stick as a full-time leadoff hitter? Because if he does, I just, that stat's not going to be strong for him. This year, he's mostly hit first. He has a few plate appearances second and one game where he hit eighth. But yeah, I like that pick. I think he's certainly jumped into our, you know, our thought process that early in drafts in a way that he wasn't before. So the outfielder I want to pick, this is another one where, like, so let me start with this. Here are your top 10 outfielders by the Razzball Player Rater right now. Because this is the first thing I did, was like, who jumped into my top 10? But like, who has literally jumped into the top 10? Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Jaron Duran, you took the good one, Kyle Schwarber, Jurickson Profar, Kyle Tucker, Teoscar Hernandez, Mookie Betts, Fernando Tatis Jr., Yordan Alvarez. There are three guys in that list, Duran, Profar, and Teoscar, who have arguably jumped into the top 10. And I'm not going to say Teoscar Hernandez or Jurickson Profar is going to get taken in the top 10. I don't think Teoscar Hernandez will either. But I think he's sort of the best bet of those guys other than Duran. So I'm going to go outside. This is a guy who now I'm taking a guy who is outside the top 10 right now. So it seems sort of ridiculous to say he's jumped into the top 10 when he isn't even a top 10 outfielder right this very second. But I'm going to go with Riley Green. I think he has made a huge leap in terms of his perception in general, just because last year was sort of, he missed some time. He only played 99 games. It was a very good season. Everyone recognized it was a very good season. But you still had some questions, I think, some fair questions. This year, the BAPIP has regressed, which we expected. It was 384 last year. It wasn't likely to stay there. It's actually 325 right now, and I kind of think that's low for him. I think it might come back up. But a 325 BAPIP, totally reasonable. He has very minimally dropped his strikeout rate from 27.4% to 26%. It was 28.7% in his rookie season of 2022. So Riley Green has been slowly but surely knocking one and a half points off his strikeout rate every year. That's great to see. His walk rate was 8.6 as a rookie, 8.4 last year. It's up at 12.4% this year. His home run per fly ball rate, 8.1% as a rookie, 16.7% last year, 21.1% this year. That comes with an increase in his fly ball rate as well. His ground ball rates have gone down and his fly ball rates have gone up every year. So this is every single year we are seeing progress from Riley Green. And now he's got 15 home runs in basically half a season. He's only stolen four bases. He stole seven last year. He's not like a huge stolen base threat, but he now in the last 2 years has 11 steals without being caught. So there's room for him to run a bit more. He is barreling the ball again, sort of talked about with his fly ball rate and his home run per fly ball rate and his strikeout rate, all these things that have improved year over year, 2022 to 2023 to 2024, same thing with his barrel rate, same thing with his hard hit rate. He's showing all the kind of progress you want to see. He's still only 23 years old. He'll turn 24 right as the season is ending. So he'll play all of next year at 24. And this was a guy who was an elite prospect, like a truly elite prospect a year ago, 2 years ago, year and a half, something like that. So there's great pedigree here for Riley Green. You take that kind of pedigree, like he was the fifth overall pick in the draft in 2019. You got a 23-year-old who was a fifth overall pick in the draft, who is showing progress year over year, who is currently 12th among outfielders on the Razzball Player Rater. I'm all in on Riley Green. I think this is this guy is going to be a star, and I think he's going to be a star for a long time. Looking at him versus Duran is sort of an interesting one because Duran's obviously been better this year. And I think if you had to pick one of them next year right now, I think you'd have to take Duran over Green. But if you ask me, like, which of these guys is going to have the better next 3 to 5 years, I think I'd take Green.
Well, Green has a huge advantage in that he's like 4 or 5 years younger than Duran. So Duran's going to turn 28 before next season. So he's kind of a late bloomer, which is why I'm glad you brought up the prospect thing. And it's why I like Green so much, because he's so young and he does have this pedigree. Like, you know, you brought up the scouting report for Duran, the one on Fangraphs, that's a scouting report from 2021. And he just became such a different player. He had two massive swing changes since then. So like, I don't know if we can predict what kind of player Jan Duran is going to end up being. But Riley Green, we have it. I mean, he was an elite prospect. He's finally performing like he's supposed to be. And although I don't think he has that carrying skill right now that like Duran has, like Duran's stolen bases will simply be there and that will make him, you know, fantasy relevant. And I'm not saying that Riley Green won't be fantasy relevant, but I also think that Riley Green doesn't necessarily need that carrying skill to be a top 10 outfielder. I mean, I think people at various points over the last two seasons could have easily argued that Brian Reynolds is a top 10 outfielder. And I like Brian Reynolds. What's the big difference in their final 5x5 stat line that is a difference between Brian Reynolds and Riley Green? Like, I think he's already in that conversation and he's so young, he's barreling the ball more than he ever has before, that like, if he's already basically Brian Reynolds, then yeah, I absolutely think that a dude this young with this kind of pedigree could enter the top 10. And there are differences in their games, but in terms of what you expect for a 5x5 line between Brian Reynolds and Riley Green, and Reynolds is having a great season, by the way, I don't think there's much of a difference. So if he's already in that conversation, then yeah, he's right on the cusp of being top 10.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so I'm feeling really good about Green, where I've got him. I would love to be able to go out and get him in more places. I'm not sure how attainable he is. Most of the leagues I play in, he's the kind of guy who like somebody's been sitting on him for a couple of years because they believed. And the person who believed is not selling high right now. But if he is someone who in one of your leagues, he got cut, somebody bought him last year, picked him up at the draft this year, and they may feel like they've got some found money and you think you can you can buy high. I would buy high on Riley Green. I would pay for what he's doing because I think it's legit. And I think I love seeing, I know it's small progress. I know it's just like 1.5 percentage points of strikeout rate each year, but like those kind of improvements year over year are just such a positive sign for a guy this young. And, you know, they're coming from like this year, Green has been chasing less. He's been making contact at a higher rate than he did last year. He's being a little bit more selective, even in the zone. He's brought down a swinging strike rate. Like it's just all these incremental improvements are adding up to better performance. And they're also the kinds of things that I look at and think like, man, he's still improving and he's just 23. Like, I don't know that we can be confident there's not another gear. There doesn't have to be, but it might be there. And so I'm in. I want Riley Green wherever I can get him. I think he's on the verge of maybe even a secondary breakout. So any other outfielders? I mean, I think outfield is one of the positions where, you know, breaking into the top 10 is a high bar, but there are some other outfielders who have, I think, significantly raised their profile or their value this year. Any other honorable mentions you want to make?
Yeah, there's no shortage of options. You know, Kyle Schwarber, until the injury, was having one of his best seasons. I still think there's guys who have underperformed that should still be in that conversation. Josh Lowe, since he's come back, has all of a sudden he's starting to get hot. I think the obvious one, though, not to, you know, I don't think he, I don't know if he could do enough to get to the top 10 for next year, but perhaps even more obvious than Duran and even Riley Green would be Wyatt Langford, who is starting to maybe get a little bit hot here for Texas. Great lineup, plenty of pedigree. Maybe he got off to such a slow start because he was rushed to the major leagues, but all the talent is still there. So I think we chose the right ones. I guess the answer is, if Christian Yelich was not drafted as a top 10 outfielder, I can't remember. I'm going to guess for sure he was not. Well, he is the top 10 outfielder right now, so maybe Christian Yelich. So there's no shortage of options despite how bad the position has been.
Yeah, I think as I'm looking at outfield options, a few other names that come to mind as guys who have meaningfully moved their value for me. Stephen Kwan has already set a career high in home runs, and we know that he gets on base at a super high rate. He's only stolen 4 bases, which is a little weird, but I think he'll probably get back to running quite a bit as the season goes on. And if he's all of a sudden going to be like a 15-20 type guy, which is sort of the pace, he's not on that stolen base pace, but I think he'll get back to that stolen base pace, and it is the power pace he's on. You know, you mentioned that Duran's going to get MVP votes. Duran isn't actually fifth in the AL and F4. Kwan is. He just doesn't show up on the leaderboards because he's short of the number of plate appearances because he missed a month.
That's
catch up.
Why is there a plate appearance minimum for WAR?
Well, there. Like, I mean, it's just that the leaderboard is just the leaderboard.
Anything,
right?
It's more impressive. Oh, right. Okay. I get what you're saying.
So it's just when you go to the leaderboard, it just shows you the qualified hitters. And so Duran shows up at 3.3 F4. Kwan is actually ahead of him at 3.5. Kwan, I mean, like, it seems kind of crazy, but like, Kwan, if you add 60%, because that's basically the difference in the amount of time he's played versus like Gunnar Henderson or Aaron Judge, something like that. If you add 60% to his total, he's basically pushing Judge for second behind Gunnar Henderson in F4. On a you know, per game-ish basis.
He's just such a weird player for fantasy because, like, yeah. What's there going to be besides an absurd batting average? And then if he's Luis Arraez in the outfield, like, I want that, to be clear. Yeah. But especially if it's an OBP league, it's a whole different conversation. But in 5x5, I don't know what his price is going to end up being. If he hits close to 400, his price is going to be absurd. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to bring enough elsewhere to the table to warrant his standard 5x5 roto.
No, he's not going to. He's not pushing the top 10, which is why he's just an honorable mention here and not a guy I actually want to focus on. If he is actually, like, you know, he's got 7 home runs and 240 plate appearances as a leadoff hitter, like, that's close to a 20 home run pace from him if he played a full season. Now, he's not going to get to a full season because of the time he's already missed. But like, if he played every day leading off, he'd get close to 700 plate appearances. He'd be pushing 20 home runs. If he's actually going to be a guy that you can say 15 to 20 home runs and he can get back to a close to 20 stolen base pace, and he's hitting 373 right now. So he's going to score a ton of runs. Right. Again, he's played 53 games. He has 48 runs. He's on pace for close to 150 runs over a full 162 game season. Again, he's not going to get to that, but like he's almost scoring a run a game right now. So he is a couple of categories, average and runs, where he will carry you this year. And he should be a positive in both stolen bases. And he's showing that he might be able to be a small positive in home runs. And if that's the case, if he can get to that kind of pace, then he gets really interesting near the top of the drafts. I don't think he's pushed that. I don't think he's going to, and I wouldn't count on that. But I'm way more interested in him right now than I was 6 months ago because of the season he's having. The other name that I think needs to be mentioned, another couple names, actually. I'm going to throw just three more at you real quick. You can react to any of them, none of them, whatever you want. But Jesse Winker, maybe he's back. Tyler O'Neill, maybe he's back. And the third name I was going to throw out there is Jackson Merrill, who I think is continuing to show that he can hang, which I wasn't totally sure was going to happen. So those guys have all sort of moved up quite a bit for me. Any reactions to any of those three?
Merrill needs to find that carrying skill, which again, he's a rookie. So, kind of Riley Green, I think, has better carrying skills than Merrill right now. Although I know his power has all of a sudden just emerged this season. Remind me the first two names there again,
Winker and O'Neill.
Yeah. Both guys who have dealt with a fair share of injuries. O'Neill's going to kill you in batting average. He's going to have those weeks where you're so glad you have him because he hits five home runs over the course of seven games and, he wins you a week or whatever it is. But I think he's still the guy we kind of assumed he was. I'm glad he's on the Red Sox, but until, we see that batting average come up and him stay in the field, I'm not there yet. And I, copy paste Jesse Winker.
Fair enough. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the mound. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young here with Pete Ball. We've been going through guys who have made the leap in the first half of the season from outside the top 10 to inside the top 10 at their position. And again, with outfield, we fudged a little bit. We had a little bit of willingness to go outside the top 10 because it's, a different beast than the infield positions. Same thing is true, I think, with starting pitcher. But we should talk about that when we get there because I want to talk about relief pitchers first, mostly because I want to get out of the way. Because nobody ever wants to talk about relief pitchers. To me, there's really, I think, like, I will say this. I often, like, I my CBS head-to-head, one of the things I often do in that league is go cheap at relievers, buying guys who are second in line, and then streaming through the season to find guys who can get me saves. And hopefully by the time the playoffs roll around, I've got closers. I feel like there have been no closers emerging this year. And when they have, it's been like Brian Hudson got a few saves, I think, at one point. The Blue Jays have been through a few guys, but like nobody who's like, oh, this guy's got the job now. And so I had a hard time with this one. You picked the obvious right answer. So we should talk about him first.
Yeah, I've talked about him a lot. He was my most drafted player, which sounds like a brag, but I wish it was somebody else because it's only a closer. but that's Mason Miller. Let me just give you what he is in the 100th percentile in. So like not just among the best, but the best on StatCast. He is in the 100th percentile in expected ERA, expected batting average, fastball velocity, average exit. Nope, not average exit velocity, but he is 90th percentile there. Chase rate, he's 99th percentile, so he actually sucks at that. 100th percentile in whiff rate, in strikeout rate, and that is it for 100th percentile. So he's obviously out of this world. Awesome. Will he stay in the closer role? I think he will. But whether he does or doesn't, he's clearly the name that has entered the conversation as a top 10 closer. He's a top one closer to me at this point in the season, just because of what he's bringing to the table with his ratios, particularly 62 strikeouts in 35 and two thirds innings pitched. That is absurd. So for me, it's Mason Miller. I think it is the obvious pick. There's not a whole lot to be said, but that's who I'm going with.
Yeah. I mean, the big question with Miller, and of course this is, you know, at the beginning of the show, we talked about the fact that because we're recording this 10 days before the show comes out, the pitchers are a hard call here because a pitcher could get injured at any time and drastically change their value for the next year and a half. Given Miller's history, that is obviously the biggest concern with him, right? We know what he can do. The other concern, I don't know if concern is the right word, but the other thing to be aware of with him is when Oakland moved him to the bullpen, it was positioned as being a temporary thing, right? This was Chris Sale starting his career as a reliever. This was not intended to be his permanent role. However, he wouldn't be the first guy, like, you know, that was the Jonathan Papelbon story too, if I recall right. Right.
Aroldis Chapman,
like, he would not be the first guy to be like, oh, well, he's going to be a reliever for now just to get some time, build up his arm strength, blah, blah, blah. And then he'll move back to the rotation. The difference here with Oakland and a lot of those cases, I think, is that Oakland is really bad. And so a closer doesn't actually matter much to them. You know, when Boston did that with Papelbon, all of a sudden it was like, well, if he moves out of the closer role, who steps in? And we have other options in the rotation. So are we really going to make this change and move him back to the rotation when this is working? For Oakland, that isn't the same consideration. When they go into this offseason and they start figuring out what their future looks like, they need to decide, do we feel better about Mason Miller locked in as our closer for however long he's here? Or do we need to build a rotation? And the reality is they need to do both. So I'm very curious to see what will happen. I will say this. If I were running Oakland and convinced that he is a reliever long term, he'd be on the trade block right now.
And like, I think he is. There's been a lot of rumors about Mason Miller. And players sometimes do have agency in this, right? And oftentimes it comes down to money. Like, I can make more as a starter than I can as a reliever. But if you're Mason Miller, and who knows? I haven't talked to him. This is the first time he's had success in the major leagues. And like, yeah, closers don't get paid as much as starters. But if you're a closer as good as Mason Miller. Exactly. Like, if Mason Miller committed to being a closer and he just simply was a closer and he was a free agent this offseason and hadn't put forward this season, which, you know, he's probably going to have like 25 saves because it's Oakland, but 1,000 bajillion strikeouts and a whip under 0.9.
1,000 bajillion strikeouts.
Yes. He's going to get hater money, maybe even better because he's younger. So like his payday,
the injury history would still, like, right now, he might get that money for a year. He might get that money for a year, but he's not going to get that kind of a long-term contract just because.
Okay. So the year, what did Hader get? Like 7 years, but could Mason Miller get 4 years, you know, $100 million or something? Like, I think he could, right? So like, his payday's now set up. So the player having agency in it, he might say, oh no, I need to be a reliever and I'm going to be a reliever. And if that's the case, I think that makes sense. He can still get paid and he'll stay there, but it really is. I think it's more up to him than it is Oakland. Cause I don't think he's going to be an athletic, whether he's a starter or a closer. I don't think he's going to be an athletic for very long.
Yeah, he may not be, but yeah, I think that's fair. I think I will say this. I think that when you're looking at the value of closers, and this is where your league type matters so much, in a traditional 5x5, saves are still where relievers get their value. You cannot get them anywhere else. You can make up strikeouts with your starters. You can make up whip with your starters. You can make up ERA with the starter. You cannot get saves other than from your relief spots or from a SPARP who is a closer. Fine. But that is where it comes from. And that's why, like, if you go look at the player rater right now, Mason Miller is 7th among relief pitchers. And that is not to say he doesn't belong in the top 10. He does. Some of the guys ahead of him belong ahead of him. The one guy who I really think belongs ahead of him, he's not the guy I'm talking about here because he was already in the top 10, but is Emmanuel Clase, who led the majors in saves last year and I think is on his way to doing it again this year. and doing it with great other numbers as well. But there's other guys ahead of him on the Razzball Player Radar, like Tanner Scott, Kyle Finnegan, Ryan Helsley, Craig Kimbrell, because saves still matter. And Pete, I don't know if you're looking at the player radar right now, but if you are, you know that as I was reading down from number 7, Miller, up to number 1, I already mentioned Class A. I didn't mention number 2, because number 2 is the guy I want to talk about as my reliever who's jumped into the top 10, and that's Robert Suarez. Now, the caveat with Suarez is he is only staying in the top 10 if he's still a closer, right? So the Padres love to make their moves. We don't know what they're going to be doing the rest of this year. They are still in the playoff race. How long they'll hang around, we don't know. There's just a lot of question marks there. If Suarez gets traded out to a team where he's not closing, or if the Padres go out and acquire Mason Miller, as an example, right? If they go and acquire Mason Miller and install him as the closer ahead of Suarez, well, then Suarez is going to fall out of the top 10. So this is my guy who has jumped into the top 10 for closers or for relievers is Robert Suarez, but that is on the assumption that when the season ends, he's still the closer in San Diego, and that when we get into draft season, he's still the closer in San Diego. The reality is there's no good reason he shouldn't be. He doesn't put up the huge double-digit strikeout rates, you know, 10 strikeouts per nine, 12 strikeouts per nine that you want to see from a closer sometimes. He's striking out 8 guys per 9 innings, a 24.4% strikeout rate. That's pretty good. Part of the reason his strikeout rate is low, though, is he doesn't walk anybody, so he doesn't actually face that many hitters. He's only walked 4.9% of batters he's faced. That is excellent. Take a closer who doesn't walk a lot of guys, doesn't give up many home runs. You can live without the strikeouts. The strikeouts don't need to be elite. And from a fantasy perspective, the saves are where the value comes from. And he's got 20 saves already. So you're talking about a guy who's on pace for 40 saves. He's got a 1.09 ERA. Now, that's probably not a fair assessment of what his actual production is. But if he can continue to avoid the long ball and keep the walk rate as low as he has, he's going to post 35, 40 saves with an ERA under 2. That's pretty good. And for a guy who was going, I think outside the top 30 relievers, if I go back and look at the Fantrax relief pitcher ADP, he was 34th. Now, there are some guys ahead of him. Like you say, Kikuchi is listed ahead of him. Kikuchi was going as a starter. Andrew Abbott also had him going as a starter. Cutter Crawford going as a starter. There's probably a handful of guys, enough guys going as starters that he probably was just inside the top 30. But he was going 34th in part because Yuki Matsui was going 38th because people were unsure who was going to be the closer. I grabbed Suarez where I could because I thought he had the job, and I thought as long as he had the job, he was worth rostering. I did not anticipate, like, this is not me being like, I knew he was going to be the best closer in baseball. No, second best closer in baseball. But he has been basically, from a fantasy perspective, the second best closer in baseball. And I think it was predictable that he would get first shot at the job. And this is one of those cases where, like, I will always take, you know, I don't want to grab a bad pitcher who's going to be the closer, but you give me a pitcher who's good enough and is a closer, especially for a decent team, and yeah, I'll ride that. Because the reality is teams don't change their closers because they have a better option than their current closer. They change their closer because their current closer fails. And so it was, I think, relatively easy to look at Suarez and think he's probably good enough to hold the job. And he's probably going to get first shot at the job. And now if he holds it through the year, then, you know, I think if he doesn't get traded and they don't make a trade to replace him, then he's going to be the guy next year and he'll be in my top 10.
Yeah, I think there's two things here for me. Like I feel completely different in two different ways. In one way, I'm like, yes, of course he's a top 10 closer right now. You can't argue with the performance. You can be disappointed with the strikeout rate relative to other players at the same position. Sure. That's fine. But he has simply been a top 10 closer. And so assuming he keeps the job, yes, we should draft him. Because like you said, the stat that matters is ultimately saves. The other part of me is looking at him like, this is a 33-year-old, so he'll be entering his age 34 season, who has a strand rate of over 90%, who throws 90% fastballs. who historically has had walk issues that have somehow mysteriously disappeared and doesn't strike people out. And so, like, I think it's pretty easy to make the case right now that, like, this is what Robert Suarez has been to this point, and I don't expect this going forward. But I also think it's perfectly fine to say, well, what else are you doing at the position? Because this is a guy who is getting saves and has had success doing it. So I'm not like, I'm not rose-colored glasses with this dude going forward, but I absolutely agree that he has entered top 10 closer territory.
Yeah, I think that the question with Suarez to me is, can he keep the strikeout rate and the home run rate low? Because, you know, he's got limited major league track record, right? We can say, like, this is his third MLB season. He was solid in 2022 with the Padres. He had a 2.27 ERA, 3.22 FIP, made 45 appearances. And he was striking people out, but he was walking more guys, almost four walks per nine innings, 11% walk rate. But he kept the home run rate relatively low, 11.1% home run per fly ball rate, 0.76 home run per nine. Last year, he struggled. He also had some injury issues. He only threw 27.2 innings. The strikeout rate was bad. The walk rate got better, but not enough better. And his home run per fly ball rate jumped, despite his barrel rate going down. This year, that huge drop in the walk rate, if he can maintain that while pitching to sort of his career numbers in home run per fly ball rate and home run per nine, he's going to come out looking pretty good. And again, this is like I was saying before, I don't need my closers. If I'm a major league team, I don't need my closer to necessarily be the best reliever in the game. They don't even need to be the best reliever on my team. They need to be a guy who I can put on the mound with a clean inning and say, he'll probably get three outs before he gives up a run. Right? I think Suarez can be that. And so if this is, again, one of those where we're like, if I were running the Padres, if I'm running the Padres and I make a trade for Mason Miller tomorrow, I'm not making him my closer. I'm leaving Suarez in the closer role, and I'm having Miller available to pitch when I need him. Now, there's a bunch of caveats to that where, like, I don't know Mason Miller, and maybe Mason Miller can't do that. Like, maybe Mason Miller isn't available to come in mid-inning because he's used to being a starter. He needs more time to get warmed up. Maybe the regularity of being a closer makes a big difference to him. There's a bunch of personal things that go on here that we should be thinking about before we assume that a guy can just step into that role. But if I take that aside and I go with what I know, based on what I've seen, I would rather have Robert Suarez as my closer and Mason Miller as my bullpen ace than the other way around. And so if it's up to me, Suarez has this job until he stops being able to do it. And there's no evidence that he's going to stop being able to do it anytime soon, even if he regresses off his 1.09 ERA, which, as you said, he will. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the bullpen. Or not to the bullpens. We're in the bullpens. To the starters. All right, welcome back. We are now looking at the starting pitchers as we continue through. We finish up, actually, our run through each position, looking at players who have made the leap into our top 10 at their position for keeper leagues. We started last week with the infield. Pete gave you, see if I can remember everyone we talked about. At catcher, Pete, who did you pick at catcher? I already can't remember.
Because he's not really memorable. It's Shea Longoliers.
Oh, Shea Langoliers. Yeah. You're all over the Oakland A's, huh? Shea Langoliers was Pete's catcher. I suggested that Logan Ohapi has jumped into that top 10. At corner infield, Pete, you went with Jordan Westberg as your corner infielder instead of your middle infielder, though he would have fit at both. I went with Josh Naylor as my corner infielder. At middle infield, you went with CJ Abrams, who maybe he's not jumping into the top 10 so much as solidifying top 10, but fair enough. I went with Anthony Volpe, who is maybe still sort of borderline top 10 at shortstop, but, you know, fair enough. In the outfield, you went with Jarren Duran. I went with Riley Green. And we just talked about bullpens where you had Mason Miller and I had Robert Suarez. Now we are into our starting pitchers. And this one actually, I felt like there were more options. I had a harder time looking through this, narrowing it down to the person I wanted to pick. I will start by saying that I literally just yesterday or the day before traded for the guy you picked in that CBS keeper league where he's where I have him now for $4. I had to give up a minor league stash Kobe Mayo to do it, but I'm still happy. Let's talk about that guy.
Yeah. So this was not tough. I understand why it would be tough. There's plenty of names that are interesting. Like I would have loved to have gone with Tanner Houck, but I don't think I'm being honest with the audience if I tell you I think he's a top 10 starter now. He's certainly been that so far this season. I think he leads all pitchers in WAR too, for whatever that's worth. Yeah, on the Razzball Player Rater, he's ninth. I think Garrett Crochet is an excellent option. I don't want to steal your thunder because I don't know who you're going with. But Chris Sale is the answer to this question. He has just been utterly dominant this season. Now, let's get the elephant in the room. Everybody who disagrees is going to say something about injuries. And you know what? He could get hurt. But like, if you follow the guy's career, he was an absolute Hall of Fame path, which I think he's back on. Horse, ace, every time out. He then missed a ton of time because he should have got Tommy John surgery. Then he gets Tommy John surgery. Then what? He gets hit by a comebacker. He falls off a bike. Like these, to me, that can be explained. And this is part of my frustration with how injuries are discussed in the fantasy industry. There's no consistency. It's all over the place. It's something that should be taken case by case, and yet we just make these sweeping statements that Chris Sale is injury prone. Well, if that was your mindset going into drafts and you missed out on Chris Sale, well, you missed out on like a top three starting pitcher. He could still get hurt. Of course he could. He's a starting pitcher that throws very hard. Those guys tend to get hurt. But right now he's pitching he's having one of his best seasons ever. He's probably the front runner for National League Cy Young. And this is coming in a season where the strikeout rate in baseball right now is the lowest it's been since 2017. And yet Chris Sale is having has his best strikeout rate since 2019. So there's nothing to like, what are we going to do? Break down Chris Sale? It's Chris Sale. He's an ace. Everyone knows it. He's untouchable. Unless apparently you're the Oakland Athletics who absolutely obliterated him. And if we take out that start, which is totally nitpicking, I have no idea what his numbers would be. I mean, they'd be scary good if you take out that one obviously fluky outing against Oakland. So Chris Sale is a top 10 star. He's a top 5 starting pitcher. Will he be drafted that way going into next season? Now that's a different conversation because on one hand, I'm saying like, you know, if you penalized him for being injured, like, what are we doing? Because all starting pitchers are getting injured. His can be explained, like, blah, 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 blah. Fine. At the same time, it's been a while since Chris Sale had a full, you know, however many innings, let's call it 180 innings pitched. The most he's thrown was 158 back in 2018. He's obviously on pace to pass that. So, like, how does he bounce back from that next season? Is it reasonable to expect that Chris Sale's 2025 won't be as good as his 2024 because he will be coming off of pitching so many innings and he'll be 36 years old as opposed to 35? I think that's totally fair to assume. So will he be drafted as a top 5 pitcher next year? Maybe not, but I don't know what there is to say outside of, well, he could get hurt. You can say that about any pitcher, any of them, besides maybe Zach Wheeler, which is weird because how that guy's career started.
Yeah. I mean, I like the Sale pick. Like I said, I just traded for him. In that CBS league, I need pitching. I have Kobe Mayo as a stashed minor leaguer. I got a trade offer of Mayo and Tanner Houck, who I have for like $1 or $2 for a $4 Sale. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that because Houck's been that good that I'm not also giving up Mayo. And I replied and said, I would have done this if you hadn't included Houck. And so he came back with the offer, not including Houck. So I was like, all right.
Wow, that's great negotiating skills. Yeah. Chad, there's one stat I forgot to mention. Can I just throw it out there real quick?
Sure.
Chris Sale, I mentioned, has had this long, amazing 14 seasons, 15 seasons, Hall of Fame path, all that stuff. He is posting his second best swinging strike rate of his career this year. It is at 15.1%. He has only beat that once in his long, illustrious career, and that was in 2018 with a 15.8. Otherwise, this is the second best swing strike rate of his career.
He's been awesome. I'm thrilled to have picked him up. I think you're exactly right to call him out as having jumped into this category. And maybe more accurately say he's jumped back into this category because he's been there before, which makes it all the more easy to believe that he belongs. So I was looking at the top 10 from drafts going into this season and trying to figure out who do I think is going to be top 10 for next year. So Strider, I think is Strider supposed to be back at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, he just had the internal brace. He didn't have the
full. So Strider, Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler, they were the top three this year. Gerrit Cole will be healthy, presumably next year. And while he's been struggling right now, I think that that's just rust.
I hope so.
We'll see.
I hope so. It's concerning.
But then after that, other guys. So, Tyler Glasnow, he'll be in that top group for next year, for sure. Mm-hmm. Then you've got like Luis Castillo, hasn't been as good. Zach Gallen, who's hurt. Pablo Lopez, who's been awful, inexplicably awful. Logan Webb probably still belongs in that group. George Kirby went 10th. He probably stays around that area. Aaron Nola. Yamamoto is going 12th, which I don't know where he'll end up by the end of the year. He's been good, but maybe not. Has he been top 10 good? I don't think he's been top 10 good.
No. The next guy has.
The next guy has, and he is, for me, the guy that I would say has jumped firmly into the top 10, and that's Tarek Skubal. It's probably a little premature to say that about Skubal because he needs to finish the year.
I already thought he was top 10. I still would have taken Sale, but I didn't realize Skubal was 13th. This is a good pick.
Yeah. I mean, I think here's the thing is like Skubal was, you know, you go back and look at his career. He came up in 2020. He was not very good. Fine. He was a 23-year-old. He struggled. 2021, he still wasn't very good. He threw 149.1 innings. Then in 2022, he threw 117.2 innings. He was good. Wasn't what he has become, but he was good. Then last year, he came back after missing, you know, basically a full year, came back for the second half of the season, made 15 starts, only threw 80 innings, and was just lights out brilliant at a level we had never seen from him before. So coming into the season, the reason he wasn't sort of pure top 10 is he was still a lot of like, there were a lot of question marks. How healthy is he? How long can he go? How many innings can he pitch? Was 2023 a breakout or was it just 15 good starts? Right? Like it you know, I don't know. We were talking about Cole Reagans in the same breath last year and he hasn't been nearly as good this year. So I think there were still, that's what kept him away from that top 10. Now he's come back. He's made 16 starts this year and been just as brilliant. And if you look at now his last 2 years, 2023, 2024, 31 starts, which is basically a full season. So he's now basically gone his last full season of being on the mound, 177.1 innings, 2.54 ERA, 2.38 FIP, 30.8% strikeout rate, 4.7% walk rate. He has been absurdly good for the last basically calendar year. The only thing that has me saying, well, let's, you know, it might be a little premature. And the thing I would, if I were somebody else and I were going to argue against me, the only thing that would cause me to say like, I don't know if we can say he's in the top 10 right now today is because we still haven't seen him finish a season. Like we haven't seen him do that. And so we need to see that. But over the last calendar year, dating back to this date, you know, June 28th of last year, he is first among pitchers in F4 at 6.1. He has been absolutely lights out, incredible over that stretch. He has been like, and you could say like, oh, well, other guys might have missed time. The guys he's ahead of Tyler Glasnow. He's got a better walk rate, a better home run rate. He's got a better FIP than Glasnow over that stretch. He's ahead of Logan Webb. He's ahead of Reagans, who we just talked about. He's ahead of Wheeler. Like, he's ahead of Wheeler. Wheeler, we talk about this guy, like, makes a million starts, always healthy, not what we maybe saw coming a few years ago, but it's certainly been true. WAR is a counting stat. Skubal's got him beat over the last year. So this is it. If he stays healthy, like, if he finishes the season healthy, Skubal's a top 10 pitcher next year. Easy for me. The only thing that still stands in the way is, can he actually, you know, pitch a full healthy season? And we'll know that in September.
Yeah. I mean, I love the call. I think it's 100% accurate. I think he's just simply is a top 10 starting pitcher. I'm excited to talk about honorable mentions because I think there's three names in particular that enter this conversation, but I was thinking about who are my top four. I'm going to leave fifth off because it's the next honorable mention. Who are my top four starting pitchers right now? So that's not including Strider. And it's no disrespect to Corbin Burnes. He just hasn't had the strikeouts that we're used to getting from him. And these guys have. I have Glasnow one. I'm glad that's finally come to fruition for me. I always thought Glasnow could be SP one so far. I think he is. Wheeler's two, or maybe 1B is the way to put it. And then I have Chris Sale, who I took. And then I have Tarik Skubal, who you took. I think those are the four arms going right now that I want the most.
And I assume the guy you're going to bring up, maybe not, but I assume the guy you're going to bring up is, well, I'm going to bring him up whether you are or not. The four guys you mentioned are 2 through 5 on the Razzball Player Rater. Glasnow 2, Sale 3, Skubal 4, Wheeler 5. They are all pretty close to each other. The number one guy on the list is Ranger Suarez.
Yeah.
He has to at least be an honorable mention here because he has now pitched half a season as the best fantasy pitcher out there. So whether or not you believe it's going to continue, and I totally understand if you've got questions or concerns about Ranger Suarez, but the reality is, like, he's been brilliant, and it's been based on reducing his walk rate because he's not a guy who gets a ton of strikeouts, but he's posting an elite strikeout rate minus walk rate because he's only walking 5% of hitters. He gets a ton of ground balls, so he doesn't give up home runs. And the reality is, if you don't give up home runs and you don't give up walks, you're going to be a pretty good pitcher. And 26.1% strikeout rate is not a bad strikeout rate. Right? Yeah, another guy who, like, if he walked more guys, his strikeout per nine would look better because he would face more hitters, but he doesn't. And so
his strikeouts in June have really tailed off. Like April and May, it looked pretty good. He had a lot of 8-9 strikeout games, and he even had a double digit strikeout game at the end of May. But since then, it's been a lot of fours. I have nothing against Ranger Suarez. I just, when we talk about these starting pitchers at this echelon, like top five, they're guys who can do everything Ranger Suarez is doing when it comes to ratios and wins and all that stuff. And they also get an astronomical amount of strikeouts. So that's, I don't want Philly fans to be upset. I'm not scoffing. Like, I think Ranger Suarez might be, you know, what we got from Framber Valdez the last few years, which is basically a top 15, top 20 starting pitcher. I just don't think he's, unless something magical happens where he can strike people out, he's not in this conversation for me.
Yeah, I don't think he's in the conversation of the top five, but Framber Valdez was pushing a top 10 pitcher.
Yeah, he was.
Right? I mean,
he was.
And so I think, like, Framber, he was 14th in Fantrax ADP. But that's 14th is less than a round different from 7th, from 8th, really. So, like, he was in that conversation where he was going as a top 10 starting pitcher in some places. And I don't think that's an unfair assessment of Suarez that you gave. I just think that pitcher with that low walk rate and that low home run rate because of the ground balls is in that kind of conversation, not in the best overall conversation, but in that next tier. Who is the honorable mention you were going to main?
I'll give it to you in a second. Suarez is definitely the type of guy I think is a high end number two. I don't want to leave drafts as him as my number one. I think that's the fair way to put it. Cole Reagans is number five for me. I think he is absolutely at worst a top 10 starting pitcher now. Again, a guy who is the complete package. You're getting the strike. And you could say it's like Skubal, where we need to see it for a full season. But ever since he took off with Kansas City last year, I know he had like a really strange issue last year in a Toronto outing where he like walked six and he looked like he got the yips or something like that. He's fine. He's awesome. Dynamite ace. And if we had a third co-host, I think Cole Reagans would have been the next best choice. I just think Chris Sale and Tarik Skubal should absolutely be there.
Yeah. I don't think he's in that top five. I think he's closer to that second group of pushing the top 10, but not necessarily in it conversation. That's my take on Reagans. The strikeouts are there. The walks are coming up. He's been, you know, the last couple months, especially as the strikeouts are like in April, the strikeouts were really high. In May and June, they've trended down, and his BAPIP has come down with it. And I don't know. I'm not, like, this is really nitpicking, because like I'm saying, he's in the conversation for, you know, number 10, 12, 15, like whether he's a back end number one or a high end number two, I think is a totally fair fantasy question. So this is not a, like, you know, he's outside my top 30. What are you talking about? But that kind of nitpicking is sort of what it takes to differentiate when you're getting between like Reagans versus Skubal versus Wheeler versus Glasnow. And that's sort of some little concerns I have with Reagans. But
so yeah, where would you, cause I'm looking at the pitchers now, at least I'm looking at the ESPN player rater. And I definitely hear those concerns, but like I'm having a hard time finding, other than Corbin Burnes, who would you also take over Reagan? So we've got, I agree with those top four: Glasnow, Wheeler, Skubal, and Sale. I'm taking over Cole Reagans. Corbin Burnes, I can absolutely see the case. I love the strikeouts I'm getting from Cole Reagans, but honestly, fine. If we want to take Corbin Burnes, I wouldn't push back on that. Who else are we definitely taking over Cole Reagans?
I mean, so it's worth noting that if you go to the Razzball player rater, again, not the be all end all of everything, but Reagans is 24th on the Razzball player rater among starting pitchers. Now, I think that's low.
I mean, that's low, like Ronel Blanco. So I don't put a lot of stock in that.
No. But there are guys ahead of him. So we talked about Glasnow, Sale, Skubal, Wheeler. Burnes, I expect Cole to be back in that by the end of the year. Now, right now, that's just speculation, right? I mean, we'll see. Strider, right? So that's seven. George Kirby. So
are you, let's say,
Reagan Logan Gilbert
finishes the year doing basically what he's doing. Are you going to take Strider ahead of him in the winter and in the spring?
Assuming the updates we get on Strider are that he's healthy and can be ready to go for spring training, yes.
Okay. I don't think I'd be able to do that. And yeah. I love Spencer Strider.
I don't know. When we're talking Strider, the other name that belongs in this conversation is Shane McClanahan.
Yeah. Who we might see before the season's done. He's up to throwing 135 feet, apparently.
Right. And so if he comes back and even throws, you know, a handful of innings late in the year and shakes off some of that rust and is able to have a normal offseason, he goes right back into this conversation too.
Above Reagans?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. I think I just like Reagans a lot. I think that's ultimately what this is.
Yeah.
Logan Gilbert's an interesting one. You know, if we are talking
about mentioned Gilbert, yeah.
Then like Gilbert has been on fire. Good home park, all that stuff. I'm looking at the Razzball player rater, and like I can't fathom that Shota Imanaga is only the 25th best starting pitcher in baseball this year. Like Nick Lodolo has been better than Cole Reagans and Shota Imanaga this year. I'm very confused looking at this.
I mean, the only thing I can think, let's see, Shota's got 7 wins. Dolo has 8. And maybe it could be as simple as that. Okay, I don't know.
If it's a wins thing, I mean, that's so unpredictable.
Yeah. No, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying Reagans is 24th, therefore, why would you ever consider him top 10? I'm just saying that if you start looking at where he is compared to some of the other names on here, there's reason to think, like, I think you can make a case for Garrett Crochet over him, especially if he finishes the season healthy.
That's fair. I agree with that.
So now we're getting to a point where we've named a good 10, 12 guys. And so that's where, no, you and I are separated by a handful of those names on Reagans. Like, you have him over a couple of the guys that I would put him below. But that is going to end up being the difference between, is he, you know, your 8th, 9th, 10th starting pitcher off the board, or is your 14th, 15th, 16th starting pitcher off the board? The reality is, at the end of the day, you're going to draft him in the top 10. And so he's going to be in the top 10, and I'm not. And so I'm not going to get him anywhere. that's what's going to happen. But that's where, to me, he was close, but he fell into the honorable mention category to me with Gilbert, with Crochet, but not, he's closer to those guys to me than he is to Scooble and Sale.
Are we being rude to Sonny Gray by not mentioning him?
Yes,
he has been
probably
like nobody wants to take Sonny Gray over something exciting like Garrett Crochet or Cole Reagans or, you know, Luis Gil, the last two starts has really taken a step back, but like it wouldn't have shocked me if we did like, you know, 2 months in, let's do another draft and Luis Gil went in front of Sonny Gray. But Sonny Gray has been so damn good.
Sonny Gray. I mean,
I don't either.
Here's the thing.
Does anybody?
He's 34 years old. He doesn't turn 35 to after the season. I guess that's good. But he's 34 years old. He is posting the highest strikeout rate and the lowest walk rate of his career.
Right.
How does that happen at age 35? And I don't know. I don't know what to make of it at all. And so,
well, he doesn't throw very hard and never has. So in terms of aging, like he's not going to be someone who's like overly reliant on the velocity.
No, he's not overly reliant on velocity, but you would almost think like there's two ways those guys who aren't super hard throwers can play out as they age. One is they're not overly reliant on their velocity, so losing a little bit doesn't hurt them as much. The other is their velocity was borderline to begin with. And so if they lose half a mile per hour, they're toast. And
yeah,
so
that's true.
He has, I mean, I'm looking at Savant right now. Last year, he threw 27% four-seamers, 21% sweepers. That's 24% and 19%. They've both gone down. They're still his two most used pitches this year, but down a little bit. Last year, his third most used pitch was a sinker at 16%, tied with his curveball at 16%. This year, his third most used pitcher is his cutter at 17%, tied with his curveball at 17%. The sinker is only down to 16%, so it hasn't gone down a ton. The changeup is down to 6%, where it was, which is actually where it was last year. Basically, all he's done with his repertoire is he's throwing the cutter 5% more at the expense of the sweeper and the four-seamer. Like, I guess I should dive into like the shape of his pitches to see if he's made some like meaningful changes. Because like his pitch mix itself, like his next start could be enough to move his pitch mix. Why is it so hard for me to say? Sonny Gray's next start could be enough to move his pitch mix back to being the same as it was last year. So maybe it's that, you know, extra 5% throwing his cutter is making all the difference. But there's I just don't get it. And it's like,
I think it's just, it's a crafty veteran who's had lots of major league success. I think it's all just coming together for a career year. Like, that's my guess. To make this just more confusing, he does throw, like you said, five different pitches, really six different pitches, like a lot. But his most used pitch, as you said, is his fastball. He throws it 24% of the time. The batting average against is 322 on the fastball. And yet he still is like the sixth best starting pitcher on the Razzball player rater with a whip under one.
No, and this is, you know, the Razzball player rater. No, the Razzball player rater also, like, you know, it'd be easy to look at that and be like, well, yeah, he's got like guys are getting stranded, the BAPIP's low, whatever. Like, his ERA is 2.81, his FIP is 2.61, his XFIP is 2.76, his Sierra is 2.87. Like, that's just how well he's pitching.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's so weird.
It's not like weird. I don't get it. He's also, by the way, giving up the highest barrel rate of his career. So like, I'm with you. I do not understand it. We absolutely should mention him as an honorable mention here. He wasn't near the top 10. I still don't think he'll be near the top 10, but he's doing it right now. So I guess we have to call it out. But yeah. Well, we now have 2 weeks before we have to record again since we've got these two episodes out of the way. And I'm going to spend at least some of that time trying to figure out what Sonny Gray is doing because I'm confused.
What's going on there?
Yeah. So on that note, I'm going to go figure out what's up with Sonny Gray. And I hope you guys have had a good 4th of July. Hope you're enjoying your summer, and we'll be back with you with a timely recording of an episode next week.